Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What a get no punch. Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Lance Meadow, John Schmelk with you, talking Giants and NFL football for the next 1 hour right here on Giants.com. Hope everyone's having a great day. We are as well. Big guest coming up at around 12:40. Chris Vaughn, defensive backs coach out of the University of Texas, will be joining us to give the down low on Michael Thompson and what he could bring to the Giants team. And Lance, I think it's going to be a good spot, get a little inside look at maybe one of the guys that we didn't talk a whole lot about going into the draft, but now we'll have a chance to compete for a starting spot in the Giants.
Especially since we have a young group of safeties on this roster currently. And just to give you some background on Chris Vaughn, he took over as secondary coach in 2014 when Charlie Strong became the head coach of the Texas Longhorns. So he's relatively new to the Texas program, but he's worked with Thompson over the course of his senior season and is well aware of what he did before he arrived at Texas. And Thompson is a player that contributed on special teams. He's a player that contributed in the slot as well as the safety position. So he brings a great deal of versatility to the Giants. It'll be nice to get a different perspective on how this player could potentially fit into within the Giants scheme.
Absolutely right, and we'll have a chance to get a better look at Michael Thompson, OTA start in a couple of weeks. That'll be a lot of fun. Rookie minicamp in the books, obviously, but now the Giants move forward as they try to figure out who's going to be on this roster come September. And that's really what the goal here is, Lance. It's to teach, it's to evaluate, and it's to figure out exactly what you have in all these players that are on the roster over the next, let's see, May, June, July, August, 4 months until we get to the regular season opener in September.
Well, the goal over the last few weeks since the draft, John, is just to add volume to the roster, substance. And I think that they certainly accomplished that goal with what transpired at rookie minicamp. You had a number of players that were undrafted that were brought into the roster at a variety of different positions. Remember, before the draft, we were talking about how there were only two safeties on the roster.
Yep.
And it was Nat Burhe and Cooper Taylor. Now, all of a sudden, you have options. And it's not necessarily that they're all going to make the 53-man roster, but you want options to bring about competition during the course of OTAs and camp. And I think that's what they accomplished. And there's going to be a lot of position battles because you look at the roster right now, John, and a few of these topics are on the fact and fiction that'll be up on Giants.com in a few days. Wide receiver, there's a number of players. Defensive line, there's a number of players. As I mentioned, safety all of a sudden has become a position where there's a great deal of depth. And that means that there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be battling each other each and every day with an opportunity to solidify a job on the 53-man roster. And that's what you want.
Yeah, and right now, to me, the defensive line is probably the deepest position on the team. You got a defensive end spot where you have six guys that I think are probably roster deserving. At defensive tackle, I could argue there are five guys that are deserving a roster spot. You know, I think there'll be some competition for the final couple spots between Marcus Kuhn. We'll see if Cullen Jenkins can, you know, as a veteran, can do what needs to be done to stick on this roster this year. But, you know, a guy like Jay Bromley is going to be on the roster. Demontre Moore is going to be on the roster. Kerry Wins, I believe, is going to be on the roster based on what he did towards the end of last year. Kenrick Ellis was a big acquisition, a run stopper. I mean, there are just so many defensive linemen right now on this team that you believe can contribute. And it's going to be really tough for this Giant coaching staff and front office come the end of August, come the end of training camp, after those four preseason games are in the book, to figure out exactly who is going to be here to contribute, and who can you maybe try and squeeze onto that practice squad if you have to?
Well, if you go by last year's numbers, they kept 10 defensive linemen. They kept five defensive ends. They kept five defensive tackles. I would expect at minimum they're going to have 10 again because, as you just listed, John, you have 10 penciled in right now. You can maybe even push for 11 depending on how somebody produces during the course of camp. You threw out a number of names. I think one guy you may have not mentioned is George Selvey.
Absolutely right.
Selvey's a veteran who was brought in from the Dallas Cowboys, has experience within the division. That's another player. So I'm expecting 10 at minimum. This could be the one season, depending on how, of course, the health plays out during the course of camp, that maybe you're going to push 11, especially if somebody outperforms one another.
Yeah, no question about it, but that's what you want competition. And quite frankly, if there's a spot where you want a lot of players in Steve Spagnuolo's defense, is at the defensive line spot because he likes to rotate guys in and out. You look at how the NFL defenses work these days. You want to rotate pass rushers. It's just as important to have your most talented guys out there as it is to have a fresh body out there. A guy's going to rush the passer a lot better if it's his 36th or 37th snap of the game as opposed to his 65th or 66th snap of the game. So having a number of guys that are talented to rotate and having them fresh certainly does give the Giants a leg up on the defensive side of the ball. And what I like most, too, Lance, is that a lot of these defensive linemen are flexible. You know, Kerry Wynn can play inside, he can play outside. Robert Ayers can go into tackle and rush the passer, or he can stay out there at defensive end. George Selfie had dipped in and played a little defensive tackle for the Cowboys now and then. Owe Odighizuwa was a guy that they believe might be able to slip in a defensive tackle and play a little bit there. So you have guys that are versatile, that can do a little bit of everything, and that'll give Steve Spagnuolo a lot of fun things and alignments and tools and setups to use on that defensive line.
Well, he has a track record of liking to revolve around a group of players as opposed to sticking with four guys during the course of a game. So this is going to play right into his hands, and it's a copycat league. And you hear that cliche thrown out all the time, John. What the Seattle Seahawks have done over the last few seasons, they had guys like Cliff Averill who were rotational players. And Cliff Averill could be an every down defensive lineman for just about any team in this league. Another team I'll throw out, speaking of the NFC West Division, look at what the St. Louis Rams are doing.
Yeah.
They bring in Nick Fairley. Nick Fairley could be a rotational player on any other team. He would be a starter for all four downs. That's the example of what's playing out across the NFL landscape, and the Giants are no different right now.
How about the Jets? They draft Leonard Williams. They already have Sheldon Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson that play the same position. So what are they going to do? They're going to rotate the three guys and keep them fresh, which will make them better players when they're on the field. So it's certainly a situation with the Giants. I'm not going to call it an embarrassment of riches, but they certainly have a lot of guys that they have options in terms of how they're going to use them, where they're going to use them, and what they're going to do at that defensive tackle spot. 201-939. And defensive end spot, 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. That's how you get in touch with us right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We'll be taking your calls for the next half an hour. Then at 12:40, we'll be joined by Chris Vaughn, defensive backs coach for the University of Texas, and he will talk about Michael Thompson with us, give us the lowdown on who the Giants got with their fifth-round pick at safety. Or a fourth-round pick at safety, excuse me.
Fifth-round pick. They gave it up in the Landon Collins deal.
Sorry about that. And then, obviously, sixth-round Jeremy Davis, and so on and so forth. Let's go to the calls and start out with Kashawn in Maryland first. Kashawn, how you doing?
Hey, hello. I'm first. Woo-hoo. How you guys doing?
Hi, Kashawn. How are you?
Doing well, Kashawn. How's everything?
Good, good. Okay, a few things. First of all, Odell Beckham Jr., let me just be the first to say that I wish him the best. I'm going to speak positive thoughts and positive energy because things like that, we all know what they are. They make me really nervous.
You know, I was waiting for this.
Okay.
Kashawn, I was wondering how quickly I would get this call today because I had tweets all night last night, Giant fans acting like someone had just set fire to MetLife Stadium, just freaking out all over the place. Then I'll say it, that Odell Beckham Jr. got voted onto the Madden cover. I will say this. Last year, Richard Sherman was on the cover of Madden. The Seahawks went to the Super Bowl, and Sherman had a Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber year. Don't worry about it.
Okay, I know. I'm just so nervous. I'm trying not to, John. I'm trying to be positive, but I was so disappointed when he won. I was like, no. Okay. Can I vent to my family for a bit? You know, I'm at work, you know, and I wanted to call. And, Lance, I'm glad you're here because I wanted to say this to you for a month. I'm sitting here minding my own business in my office, and this Cowboys fan, did I tell you how much I hate Dallas? He comes in, he starts talking, you know, telling me how they're going to win the division and how we're going to stop da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, wait a minute, how we don't give enough credit, which reminded me of you. Like, one day you were, I listened to your show when you do Sirius sometimes on Saturday, and you were co-hosting with some guy, some jerk, Jamie, and you guys were talking about the upcoming season. And he just automatically gave the Dallas Cowboys saying that they were going to win the division and go to the playoffs. And, Lance, you did not combat him. You did not say, well, wait a minute. Let's put things into perspective here. We haven't played the game yet. I was thoroughly disappointed in you. And I'm like, Lance, you gotta represent. Do not let the media stroke and keep pumping Dallas Cowboys Eagles up because just because they were successful last year, that has absolutely nothing to do with this year. So I just wanted to say that.
Lance, defend yourself. Defend
I've had a lot of conversations on the air, so it's hard to remember exactly the time and
don't
place.
Cop out on
I'm
me
not
now
copping
now.
Out.
Oh, come on.
I can't remember the exact conversation. There's been a lot of football conversations that I had on the air. I would agree with what Kashawn just said, though. It is extremely too early to speculate about who's going to win what. Haven't had the finalization of the rosters and so forth. But, you know, everybody likes to go with the favorites, and the Cowboys did win the division last year and so forth. So it's understandable why people are crowning them. But, you know, I say the same thing to Giants fans who may be concerned or a little bit too excited. It's very early. We got a lot of off-season activity to play out before we get to the nuts and the bolts of the season.
I absolutely agree, and I just hope my focus is everybody's worried about the record. I just want us to do better in the division. I'm pumped. I'm going to be at the Cowboys game. I'm pumped. We better at least split with the Cowboys. And last thing before I go, do you guys know why the Giants didn't at least try to go after Kyle Arrington? I thought that would have been a great depth for a slot corner because Tremaine McBride, I know he's the lead to land the position, but he has had injury concerns, and I thought that would have. And then Prince Mukamura, you know, he is good, but he's not the most, you know, durable player either. So any thoughts on why the Giants didn't try to go after him? And good talking to you guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks, well, I don't know whether or not the Giants talked to him or not, to be honest with you. I can't tell you whether or not they had any conversations. I honestly don't know. Look, I think the Giants looked at him. They look at every player that is the free agent market. They must not have thought that at whatever price it would have cost to get him here that he was better then the guy's already at the roster to compete at that slot corner spot. So, trust me, the Giants have reports and scouting reports and pre-made packages on everybody. So, as soon as somebody comes available, they'll look at everything they have. They'll look at what the evaluation is. They'll decide if he fits the roster, if he thinks he's an improvement over what they have. And Kyle Arrington did not pass that test in terms of the price would have had to got him. So, the Giants did not end up bringing him in.
And I'll add this, because Sean mentioned Tremaine McBride, who seems to be the front runner for the slot position. There are other players on the roster right now. Now, I understand they also have injury history, such as the Jayron Hosleys of the world, the Mike Harrises of the world. But I will note, Spags John was asked about this when he spoke to the media for the first time, specifically about the slot corner position. And he actually spoke very highly of Mike Harris, how he said that he's gone and looks at him already. He seems pretty confident in what he showcased. He's also confident in Tremaine McBride. Hosley, I don't believe, came up in the conversation, but he is on the roster. So, you know.
But he stressed open competition.
Correct. He did. He did not say that anybody solidified the job. He said it's going to be one of those intriguing battles to watch during the course of OTAs and training camp. But, you know, it is one that he realizes is very wide open. It's not one of those that you go into OTAs and you say, okay, I have in my mind this is the player that's going to assume that role. So I understand where Kashawn is coming from, but once again, this is what I emphasized with respect to the tight end debate last season that a lot of Giants fans brought to the forefront with respect to Larry Donnell. The Giants are going to look at their internal options first, and they're going to try to give their internal options the best opportunities to win jobs. When that all of a sudden expires or is exhausted, then perhaps they'll start to experiment and look elsewhere. But, you know, guys who know the system are familiar with what the Giants are all about, and I understand it's a new system. They're going to be the first ones up to have an opportunity to solidify those jobs.
I'm just happy we found your one listener on Sirius Satellite Radio.
Well, I know I could pencil that in. Listen, I was worried it was almost half a person. Now we know at least it's one full person, so that's at least a positive.
So we got your parents, and now we have Kashawn.
Yes, exactly. So there you go.
You're up to three.
Yeah, we're up to three. We're making progress. We're making progress. Next week, we're going to aim for four.
You're trying to catch up to Pat Hanlon with his fan club numbers.
Yes, exactly.
It's going to be tough to get there.
It will be very tough. I mean, he's in a class of his own, which has been well documented.
Here's a question for you.
Uh-oh, this is always dangerous. Thank you, Kashawn, for bringing up this subject, by the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Take a look to see if the Tino follows you on Twitter.
No, he doesn't. I can tell you.
He doesn't
still?
It's
been my one biggest
Wow.
Yes, I know.
I have other friends, too, and they complain to me that our colleagues, Paul and I work for the Northeast Conference. We do some games for them. And a lot of people that work for the conference are very active. They, you know, they tweet for the conference, and Paul doesn't follow them either. And they get very upset. He goes, I can only follow the people that are pertinent to what I do with the NFL. So apparently you are not pertinent.
Apparently I'm not. Well,
I already knew you weren't pertinent. But the fact that Tino won't even take the effort of making one click on Twitter to follow you.
Yes.
I would like to get the fans' opinion on this, too. Because to me, it is the complete, utter lack of respect that he's showing you that I think should get you really upset.
Well, fortunately, I can sleep well at night, despite that fact. So I'm not necessarily losing sleep over
this
matter.
Now, do you follow Paul?
Yes, I do follow Paul. Correct. Now, I don't necessarily follow Paul because I'm trying to get any intel out of it. It's more so I could use it as substance for, you know, maybe perhaps additional material on programs like this. So that's the only use of following him on Twitter.
Wow. Now, he does answer a lot of Giant fans' questions during his power walks. You don't enjoy those?
No, I just simply overlook that and go to the next tweet on the list. Now that we've made that clear.
I should point out that Tino does follow me.
Well, that was going to be my next question, but I knew you were going to pat yourself
on
the back.
Well, honestly, I wasn't sure. I just looked.
Oh, you just
looked to
confirm.
I wasn't positive about it, and I guarantee you he follows Anita, right?
I probably would assume that
so
is the case.
That means you're the only one he doesn't follow.
Yeah, correct. So maybe I should feel good that I'm in a unique category.
Or feel extremely insulted. I mean,
well,
you could also feel that.
Unfortunately, well, I should say fortunately, my life is not necessarily measured by whether or not Paul Dottino follows me on Twitter. I could maybe make it small and we could have an entire debate on that. But I wouldn't mind if you would press him a little bit about this
subject. I think next time you host, you need to man up and do it yourself.
I think that it will be coming up perhaps during the remainder of the offseason, and it could even find its way onto the radio broadcast at one point this season, too.
Okay.
Because remember, I never shy away from material to get him.
If you want to save that for the radio broadcast, I think
you would advise me to do that.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. We may have to put him on the spot.
Yeah, you want to do it publicly. Like, in front of as many,
without
as big of an audience as
possible. Correct.
As
so that means it has to be a home game then.
Correct. Because you want to do it live on in the outside the stadium and have people see it live, too, to see his face turn beet red or at least orange because of the tan.
Now, here's another one. Does he follow Jeff Fegels, and does Fegels follow him back? That would be another one that I'd be curious to check.
I bet you Fegels follows him, and I bet you Paul does not follow Fegels. Fegels follows you.
Yes.
And Fegels does follow me as well, I believe.
We'd have to see if that is...
It's too hard to figure out if other people follow other people. It's a very long
list. But that would be another one.
I wouldn't waste your time.
Well, if there are some viewers and listeners who have some free time on their hands, maybe you can
look
into that.
No, that's quite okay. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Richie on Long Island. He's up next. Richie, thanks for being patient. What's going on, pal?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Richie.
No, I just wanted to talk about the safeties. I know you probably had a whole bunch of calls about safeties, but
that's all right.
I like to see that how the differences that how Bennett Jackson has, you know, some cornerback experience, how Mykel Thompson has some cornerback experience. I think they're going to be used a little bit different ways. You know, I think because as far as the secondary, you know, cornerback after Tremaine McBride. There's a lot of, you know, unproven talent, let's say, like J-Ron Hosley, who I don't think, you know, has made a name for himself as of yet. I'm hoping that can change, but, you know, I just was thinking about that. I was talking about that with somebody saying that, you know, there's a lot of unproven talent, but I think there's going to be something to look forward to in the new defense that's going to be brought in.
Well, Richie, not to cut you off, and we'll let you continue. Let me piggyback off of your point with respect to Hosley, because you were talking about perhaps this is an opportunity for him to reinvent himself, make a statement. He's got two things working for himself in terms of in his favor. Number one, he's got a new defensive coordinator who doesn't necessarily have a history with him. And on top of that, he's got a new positional coach. There's a new DBs coach on the Giants, too. Those are two positive spins for J-Ron Hosley. If he wants to come in with a fresh slate and prove that he is worthy of either solidifying the slot position or being the number one backup, and then on top of that, if he could stay healthy and get through training camp, that would be a third element that I would bring into the conversation. So there are elements in play that I think are very much in his favor. He now has to take advantage of those things that you just alluded to.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, I'm really hoping that Prince can stay healthy this year, too, because he has yet to play, you know, like a full season, I think. After Tremaine McBride, I was looking at the, you know, just at the roster. I'm like, wow, it's really short. Like, it's a big downfall in the amount of the people that have actually done anything in the league. Also, the defensive tackle position, you know, I know that's going to be a good one because – Hankins is pretty good, and Jenkins, it's going to be a good mix of guys. You know, I'm just trying to be, you know, optimistic as possible for this year and forget all the Madden curse thing because Richard Sherman didn't get hurt year before him. You know, there's been like two or three guys that haven't been hurt. Calvin Johnson, he was on the cover, didn't get hurt.
Calvin Johnson, though, had the worst year of his career the year he was on the cover, just FYI.
Yeah, he definitely – had, you know, nobody was hurt, you know, within the past 3 or 4 years. Adrian Peterson was on the cover. He had one of his best seasons. So, you know, there's a there's no reason to be worried about. I'm not, you know, that shouldn't even be a thought in people's heads.
Appreciate it.
Well, I would agree with you, Richie, and appreciate the phone call. I don't think you get caught up in those types of things. I don't know if there's enough of a consistent track record, first of all, to back up the claims that everybody that's been on the cover has had some issues. For about
5 or 6 straight years, there was a bad run.
But I think that it's broken open since that five or six-year stretch. As we mentioned, you know, Sherman had a very productive season,
correct,
and he played all 16 games last year.
Let's see. I got a bunch of tweets about the curse thing. Let's see what we got here. Mr. Ruiz 81, OBJ was actually the second Giants player to grace the cover of Madden, but we're not going to count Peyton Hillis because he was
a member of
the cover when he was a member of the Browns, and he showed up to the Giants later, so I'm not going to count him. And as far as I went back in my recollection, I don't think any other Giant has ever been on the cover. Let's see what else do we got here. Curses are made to be broken. Remember the curse of the Bambino. Mike Farmer, by the way, Mike Farmer 20 got married. You saw that last week.
He actually found
somebody to marry.
Well, that's
always that's the most impressive thing. So, Mike, in all seriousness, congratulations on being married. It's good to see you're back on Twitter. I don't believe in the Madden course. Did it one time, but no more. Just happy to have first Giants on the cover. Be happy for him. Let's see. And Joshua Race, I'm pretty sure that Odell Beckham will end this so-called Madden curse. So there you go. Giant fans are a little more optimistic today than what happened. I know a lot of Giant fans that were very upset that he was even in the running, for that matter. And then when he got picked, I had some people freaking out a little bit.
Well, you can understand why he's in the running.
Well, of course.
He's one of the most popular figures in the NFL in a very short period of
time. And he got voted in. I mean, that's popularity contest. Right?
Well, it's not just Giants fans that are voting for or against the player.
And I think
NFL fans.
And I think Gronkowski, you know, with this whole deflate thinking going on with the Patriots, his timing was bad to try to get voted in for anything, to be quite honest with you.
There were a number of other factors outside of football that didn't help his cause.
He's funny, though, man. Some of the stuff, he doesn't care. Some of the stuff, did you watch him on ESPN all yesterday, Gronkowski?
Well, I saw, what was it, the Bleacher Report
video?
Some
of his, like, double entendres he likes to use.
Yeah,
he's
a character.
Dude, please tell me you watched the Conan O'Brien, Marshawn Lynch, Rob Gronkowski.
Oh, yes, the video game battle. Yes, I did see that. Yes, that was funny.
It's funny.
That was a very nice put-together piece.
It was well done.
Extended one, which I thought was better. There was one that I think was just aired on the show, but then they had actual additions that they took out.
Really?
Which were just as funny.
I watched it, but the one I watched online was like 6-7 minutes.
I think there's ones, though, that are even longer.
Really?
Pushing about 10.
I didn't know that. Wow.
You got to do some additional homework.
Apparently I do. Yeah. See, maybe I should start following you on Twitter myself.
See, there are some slight benefits to that.
Let's go to Alex in Georgia next. Alex, what's going on?
Yeah, how you doing, fellas? Actually, I'm calling because day before yesterday, Lance and Danita had a controversy over the inevitability of Flowers starting. I don't know if Lance remembers that.
Well, you know what? Lance actually ended the show and recanted the whole conversation to me off the air, so I can guarantee you he remembers it well.
Okay.
I wouldn't classify it as a controversy, but continue.
Because I want to defend Lance. I think he was right on. I mean, just because we all expect that Flowers is going to be a starter doesn't mean that it's inevitable, that it's a law. I mean, there's as you fellas keep saying over and over again, and rightly so, I mean, we've got a lot of stuff ahead of us. We've got a training camp. Just think about it. The coach is not going to let somebody who is not ready defend Eli Manning. The guy could get killed. So, I mean, I think Lance is right. I think he's right on again. And my question is this. If I remember correctly, and you guys know probably better than me, did Eli Manning start right away the first game?
Kurt Warner started the first six games of Manning's rookie year. I think Manning went 3-3. Warner went 3-3 or 4-4 or something like that in Manning's rookie year. So I think Eli started around 8 games his rookie year, give or take. I would have to double check it.
Right. Then I'm not completely off. And wasn't Eli Manning like the third pick? And there was a trade between for Philip Rivers.
Yes, you know, and Kurt Warner, I believe, Manning's first start, by the way, came on
November 21st.
That smells around week 10. So I think Kurt Warner actually went 5-4 or 4-5 his first 9 games. And if I remember right now, that was the 10th game of the year. What was your question? I'm sorry.
Lance is right on. Lance's point And I understood it, you know. So, Lance, I respect you, and if no one else listens to your show, I listen to your show.
Well, I certainly appreciate the kind words, man. Alex. Thanks so much for weighing
in.
My point was not so much that Ereck Flowers is not going to start. It was that there's no benefit, and I spoke to you about this off the air, John. There is no benefit whatsoever for Tom Coughlin, for Ben McAdoo to come out today and say that Ereck Flowers is the starting right tackle or Ereck Flowers is the starting right guard.
In fact, not only is there no benefit to it, if anything, there's a potential negative to it because the kid could theoretically become complacent. If
Absolutely.
He says, oh, well, you're the starter no matter what, well, then, oh, I don't have to work that hard. Now, I'm not saying that's how Ereck Flowers works, but, you know, coaching the mental status and mental emotions of these players is part of the job. And the Giants want to make sure all these players in this roster, from the rookies to the veterans, know that you have to earn your spot as a starter. And look, here's the bottom line. All we got was calls the last 4 or 5 years complaining how Tom Coughlin doesn't like to play rookies. Oh, he doesn't like to start rookies. Not going to start rookies. Now Ereck Flowers is guaranteed to start as a rookie. Well, which one is it? Can't be both ways. Now, if Flowers is one of the five best offensive linemen, guess what? He's going to be in there. But if Flowers is getting wrecked in training camp, if in the preseason game, guys are running around him like he's standing still, and again, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I would be super-duper surprised if it did. But if he's not ready to start in the NFL, guess what? He's not going to start. And Pugh will be out there at right tackle, and I would imagine either, maybe Newhouse would get in the mix, John Jerry will be in the mix, whoever that fifth starter is going to be, and Flowers won't start. Now, do I think that's going to happen? Do you think that's going to happen? No. We think he's going to be good enough to start. But you're right, folks. They're not going to just throw him out there because he's the ninth pick. He's going to have to play well enough to do it.
Plus, like I said, they have yet to get on the field, John. They have yet to play next to one another. They don't know what the ideal combinations are in terms of the offensive line. Pat Flaherty hasn't had an opportunity to see the veterans and the rookies go together with one another on the offensive line. All of that has to be taken into consideration before any member of this coaching staff comes to a decision with respect to what's going to be put forth out there in week number one. And I think that's the wisest philosophy to adopt at this point. I understand the fans, they want to know Flowers is going to be out there week one, and that could very well come to fruition.
Oh, sure.
And the percentages are very high that that's going to come to fruition. But right now, I'm talking about May 14th, there is absolutely no benefit to go out there and declare Ereck Flowers a member of the starting five with respect to the offensive line.
Absolutely not. And I was at Shona Harris golf outing yesterday, by the way. And I talked to Snee, Dylan O'Hara. The story will be up next week, a little written story. And they all had very good things to say about Flowers. And what they all focused on, it wasn't his feet, it wasn't his, his size. It was his strength and his nastiness and his ability to be a road grader. That's what all three guys were excited about, that he would bring that attitude and that meanness and that nastiness and that, blue-collar mentality to the offensive line. That's what they liked most about him. And that's one of the reasons I thought he was my favorite tackle in this year's draft. And I think right away he'll help in the run game, especially, even though he might have maybe some issues early on in the passing game.
Well, you hit it right on the nose, John. That's exactly what they want. They want him to open up the holes with respect to the running game. I brought up Eli Manning's game log,
by the way. 5-4, I was right.
November 21st was week 11.
That was the week 11 or week 10?
Week 11. There's the week. There's the day.
Oh, but okay, it was week 11, but
it was a
10th game. It was
a 10th game, correct. But it was week 11.
Got it. Yeah, because of the bye week. So they were 5-4 under Kurt Warner before that game, and then Eli took over, and the team went on to lose 6 straight, it looks like, and then they won their final game of the season against Dallas 28-24 that year. So, again, guys, just because he's a high pick doesn't mean he has to start right away. He's got to be good enough to do it. Max in New Jersey is up next. Max, what's going on, pal?
Nothing much. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for making it, Max. What's up?
I just wanted to make one observation about the pass rush, how I think this year is actually going to be really good.
Okay.
And just bear with me. It's an attempt at being a little humorous. Our pass rush, I noticed, have always been successful. We had a player that was a little bit hard to pronounce. Started with Umanura, got Kiwanuka in his prime, and now we have Odigizua, if I'm correct.
You got it.
Yep.
So in terms of the defensive line, I've heard a lot of people saying that, they don't know how it's going to be. Giants didn't do enough in draft or free agency to shore it up. But I think the opposite. I think we did really good. We picked up Kendrick Ellis, which I know is a run stuffer. That's been our biggest problem last year. Him and Jonathan Hankins, I think, is a great starting defensive tackle combo. Then you have Robert Ayers on one side, JPP on the other side. JPP, some people criticize his pass rushing skills, but if you saw him last year in the run, he was really stout against the run, and he was always within the tackle. So I think our defensive line is really good to start. And we also have really good backups now. Demontre Moore is a show-me year, but he's shown flashes. I think Odigizuwa has a lot of promise. So I just heard a lot of people complaining about the defensive line. I just want to come out and point that I think is actually really good. If we could get Beeson healthy, and it will just make it even better. And McLean proved that he could be good in the middle if Beeson is not 100%. I just want to get your guys' opinions on my thoughts.
Well, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. John threw out off the top of the show, he feels that the defensive line as a unit is the deepest group on this roster as it stands right now. I would make an argument that wide receiver, I think, is right up there in terms of the depth department.
Teasing your factor fiction
answer. There we go.
By the way, how did you get involved in doing these factor fictions? That's what I want
to
know.
Would you like to add anything else to the list of complaints today?
No.
I mean, we have covered Twitter. We have covered phone calls. We've covered issues off the show. I mean, is there anything else you would like to add to the top of the list? Continue.
I haven't brought the Bulls up yet.
Boy, you're really digging it today. Ooh, I should have worn my armor today. I don't know why I settled for thin clothing.
Answer the question. What do you got? Sorry.
No, I'm just, messing around here.
Of course.
The defensive line, I think what the last caller touched on, there are a lot of options in all seriousness. And that's a positive. And they should be able to mix and match and not necessarily wear down anyone in particular. Now, I've brought this up time and time again. One player that I think gets thrown under the radar, especially in this year's group because he got hurt last year, don't overlook Robert Ayers' production before he went down, John. He was by far the best defensive lineman on this roster.
Rushing the passer.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
He had 7 sacks before he tore his pectoral muscle, and he was getting a lot of notoriety leading up to the injury, but then I feel like he got hurt, and everybody tended to forget Robert Ayers is still on the roster.
Yeah.
So now entering this offseason, we talk about Demontre Moore and his development, JPP and the franchise tag, the addition of Ellis and Selvey. Don't forget about Robert Ayers. And Ayers, to me, is still in line to start opposite JPP. A lot can change. So the Ayers element means now, all of a sudden, some of the playmakers you're talking about potentially starting are now your second layer of defense. That's a big positive. Jonathan Hankins is coming off a career year, and he doesn't have many years in football to begin with. You brought in Ellis. You still have Marcus Kuhn. You have Jay Bromley, who was a third-round pick last year, who barely got much play. You know, that to me spells out a lot of depth. So as John emphasized, as the last caller emphasized, there are going to be a number of options for Spags to get the Giants back to that identity when he was initially the defensive coordinator, which is we're going to use a variety of different personnel, and we're going to have our best players on the field at once to make sure that they can maximize their effort to get to the quarterback. So I would echo the sentiments that a lot of fans have thrown out over the last few weeks. I see a great deal of depth on this D-line.
No question about it. And there is depth of receiver, too. I mean, you're right about that. You know the three guys are going to get most of the snaps, assuming Cruz is healthy. Dwayne Harris is your fourth guy in special teams ace. After that, I think you could make the argument the Giants could carry 6 wideouts this year if those fifth and 6 guys can contribute on special teams. So you got the draft pick, Jeremy Davis. You got Preston Parker from last year who had a good year. Marcus Harris, I thought, was outplaying Preston Parker in camp last year until Harris got hurt at the shoulder, then he had the hip. That's somebody you have to keep an eye on. Everyone's favorite preseason superstar, Corey Washington, is around. So he's somebody that the Giants could make a move on. And somebody did ask me if he's practice squad eligible. I believe he could get put on one of they extended the practice squad to those
spots,
two extra
for
spots.
Players that have some experience.
So I bet you he's a guy that could get put on one of those extended lists. But he was on the 53 for all 16 games last year, wasn't he?
But you're allowed to put a player that I think was on the 53 for 16
absolutely.
Games.
But I'm saying he could have fit in to one of those traditional spots.
Correct.
But he would be able to get into one of those extended spots that they made last year. And there's even somebody else I'm forgetting to mention. Julian Talley's the guy that's been here a long time. He's someone that'll get some work in at wide receiver. So there are a lot of guys at wide receiver, too, that certainly provide some depth. All right, in 5 minutes, we're going to have Chris
Dwayne
Vaughn
Harris,
from the University
too, by the way. We forgot Dwayne Harris.
I mentioned him.
He
was the fourth guy.
I thought you mentioned Marcus Harris. That was why. Gotcha.
Jamarcus Harris.
Marcus. Not Jamarcus. What, are we adding names now to the fold?
I was going
to
say.
There's a lot of Harrises on this roster.
Who the heck Jamarcus
I haven't
Harris?
Heard of Jamarcus. Right. That would be a new one.
I was going to say Mike Harris, of course. You mentioned him. All right. We got 5 minutes before Chris Vaughn, defensive backs coach for Texas, joins us at 12:40. Let's squeeze in a couple calls before then and go to David in North Carolina first. David, what's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hi, Dave.
Doing well, Dave.
I hadn't had a chance to call in since the draft, but I'll just make that one quick. I don't want to rehash the draft stuff. And pretty pleased with what we did.
The one thing I wanted to touch on is, you know, every other day, Charlie and Shakes call in whining and complaining about the linebacking core, and this and that, and this and that. And I agree. I'm not excited about the signings that we signed in free agency, but until Jerry Reese decides to draft a linebacker in rounds 1 through 3 since Clint sent him, the guys that we signed are going to probably be just as good as picking up a linebacker in rounds 4 through 7. And, you know, in the Super Bowl run, you know, now granted Antonio Pierce was a difference maker, but you had Kalika Mitchell and Reggie Torbor playing down the stretch, and I don't think anybody was crying when those two guys left.
Well, you know, David, I think the difference you have is on each one of those Super Bowl teams, you had a linebacker that was a difference maker. And like you mentioned, at Pierce in 07, and then in 11, Michael Boley was still an excellent, excellent football player at that point, and you mixed in a couple guys around those two.
And then, you know, in 07, Jabril Wilson left. You know, when people bring up the safety issues, you know, he left and signed in Miami, and we never heard from him again. And then the next year we finished 12-4 with Michael Johnson and James Butler. And I think the guys we have on the roster have that much talent, you know, as much talent as those two guys. I think the keys to this team are the depth in the secondary. You know, we got to hope people stay healthy.
Yep.
And I want you to turn the volume way up so Tom Coughlin can hear this. We have to start Flowers day one. Do you guys realize how much developmental time we wasted last year by plugging in J.D. Walton every game at center? Richburg should have started at center the latter half of the year. Put J.D. Walton over his keister over on the bench, and we would have already gotten a head start on this year with Richburg's development.
Well, David, I think the question last year when it came to Richburg wasn't necessarily is Richburg a better center than Walton. The question is whether or not the pair of Walton and Richburg was better than Richburg at center than whomever you would plug in at guard next to Richburg. I think that was more the calculation than whether or not Richburg was a flat-out better player at center than J.D. Walton. You know what I mean?
Understand that, I know Mosley hasn't done enough to make, you know, have you comfortable putting him anywhere on the line consistently. But I just, you know, let these guys play a little bit. I get tired of hearing about what Devontre Moore can't do instead of focusing on what he can do. I mean, yes, does he need to be better as a run defender? Sure. But so did OCU Mignora. I mean, when Umanura came off of his meniscus tear, there was many times I thought he was playing the wide nine and nobody else on the defensive line was.
Hey, Dave.
I mean, it seemed like the latter half of his career, he loved, you know, lining up wide and just ignoring the run defense.
We got to run, Dave.
All right, guys.
Thanks,
care.
Pal. Appreciate it.
The call.
Thanks, Dave, on the call. We're going to get back to your calls in just a couple minutes, but right now we're joined by the University of Texas defensive backs coach, Chris Vaughn. He coached Michael Thompson down there at the U of T. Coach, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. I'm John Schmelk, joined by Lance Meadow. How you doing today? Coach, you with us?
May have lost Coach here. We'll try to reconnect with him.
We'll try to reconnect with Coach in a couple minutes. John, I want to try to get back on the horn there. For now, 201-939-4513. We'll try to get Coach back on the line. Let's go to Steve in D.C. He's up next. Steve, what's going on?
Yeah, what's up going on? Yeah, how's it going?
Nothing much, Steve. How are you? You sound tired, man.
I'm
you
good.
Okay?
I'm good. Listen, man, I'm going to drop some heavy stuff on y'all today real quick, man. And I'm going to listen out there, and I hope y'all get a chance to. I'm going to make it real fast, man, but I want to get a chance to explain myself and articulate. I know y'all probably not going to really get too deep into what I'm saying, and I understand all that, but I just want to say this. I'm real excited about this roster, okay? I mean, I don't really see any world beaters or anything. It's not about all that. I just think we filled our needs. I like, you know, the upside. I like where these guys are projected to be at. So with that being said, you know, here's some things I'd like to see differently this year. I'd like to see more rotation on the defensive line specifically. And not only do I want to keep these players fresh, but I want to keep them competing. I don't think, this, you know, in certain positions, it's okay just to say, okay, they're the best, you know, especially if it's not a huge difference and you're not giving an opportunity for the backups to play. And the reason I say that is because these guys get in week 10 or 11, and they haven't played all year long, and then we expect them to get in there and be world beaters. So we need to play, you know, more younger guys, and I hope that's the theme. And I just want to know, you know, if it were you guys, you know, team, do you think that maybe tweaking the philosophy a little bit as far as playing these younger guys in rotation and, you know, keeping the competition level at a high throughout the year will keep people from, you know, getting injured as often and keep competition high? What are your guys' thoughts on that?
In terms of the competition you're talking about, Steve?
Like that, you know, just having fresh legs in there, you know, and just keep people ready to go. So when somebody does go down, they haven't been on the bench for 10 and a half weeks, 11 weeks, not playing.
Well, but that's what all practice is about. Keep that in mind. You know, that's how you get your depth chart in play.
I got you.
Steve, be quick here. Finish up.
You know, I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
Now, Steve, you know what? Steve, I'm going to put you back on hold here. I'm going to bring you back on after we talk to Chris Vaughn here, okay?
All right, Steve.
Put Steve on hold there, and now we'll bring in Chris Vaughn, defensive back coach for the University of Texas. Chris, sorry about that before. Thanks for joining us today. How are you this morning? John Schmuck, Lance Meadow on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com.
Doing great, guys. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Well, why don't you give me a little thumbnail? What kind of guy is Mykel Thompson? I've heard a lot about, you know, his work on the field, what he brings as a safety. What is he like working with in the meeting room? What type of student of the game is he? And what type of a guy is he to coach?
Really smart young man. I was very, very happy with Mykel while he was here, the short time that I had him. But hard worker, loves the game. His best football is ahead of him, guys. I really believe that. Just, you know, when I got here, there was a lot, of course, athletically, he's a great athlete, but a lot of football, he was still learning. And then I think his best football is ahead of him.
Coach, you had mentioned that obviously he's had a number of different positions that he's played during the course of his career, even before you got to Texas. Most notably, last season, you used him at the corner position in the slot as well as safety. Talk about his versatility and what makes him so unique compared to perhaps other defensive backs that you've worked with.
Well, he's so athletic. He's got a great burst. He can really run. He's got really good hips for a tall young man, which is hard to find. You know, you're talking about a 6'1", you know, guy that's got great hips, moves like a 5, you know, 10 guy, which those guys are hard to find, but he's got great hips. He's long. You know, when you start playing balls down the field, taller guys stay tall down the field. You know, you play sometimes with 5'10 guys, and they seem to get shorter as you know, they cover guys down the field. But he did a great job from that, you know, in that aspect. And like I said, he's a guy that I think can play in the slot, you know, according to what people want him to do defensively in their scheme. But he's a guy that's real versatile because of his athletic ability.
We're joined by Chris Vaughn, defensive backs coach, University of Texas. He coached Giants draft pick Mykel Thompson down there. Coach, you talked about his versatility. You talked about him being a smart player. Do you think that will help his transition to the NFL? I don't need to tell you. You know how complicated some of these NFL defenses and playbooks can be. You're going against very different types of offenses than what these guys have seen in college football, where there's so much spread. Do you think that transition for Mykel is going to be a little bit easier, given those traits we've talked about?
Well, I think he's definitely going to be able to adjust because of some of the situations that he was in. And the fact that we try to play a defense that's multiple in the secondary as far as coverages are concerned. So hopefully there'll be some carryover for him, you know, with you guys. So I hope that he'll come in and continue to be the young man he is, that he has been for us. And if he does, he'll excel.
Coach, the Giants have a young nucleus at the safety position, and given your experience around college football, you've seen your fair share of safeties, your fair share of schemes. When it comes to the adjustment from free safety to strong safety, left safety to right safety, what are some of those challenges, big picture, not just with respect to Mykel Thompson, but that you've seen players have to deal with as they maybe move back and forth from one side of the field to the other?
Well, I've never coached in the NFL, but coaching in college for the amount of years that I have, the one thing that I do know about the NFL game is that the hashes are a lot closer. So a lot of times those guys are going to be in the middle of the field a lot more than, you know, in college where the ball's on the hash the majority of the time. So you've got a field corner and a boundary corner the majority of the time. So you're looking at space, you know, know, but because Michael is such a great athlete, space is not going to be as big of a concern as it might be for a kid that was bigger, more of a box guy. You know, so you put him in the boundary where he's got – in college, you put him in the boundary where he's got less space to cover, and you roll him down weak into the box. Well, in the NFL, you know, the ball's almost in the middle of the field all the time, so you got to have a really good athlete back there that can do all those things and play in space. Michael, because of his athletic ability and his range, that shouldn't be a huge issue for him.
We're joined by Chris Vaughn, defensive backs coach, University of Texas. And, Coach, I want to follow up on your point. The burgeoning of the athletic tight end in the NFL, the Jimmy Grahams, who can carry down the middle of the field and carry down that seam, oftentimes require safeties to play man-on-man defense, but also will require them from time to time to play that single high and go sideline to sideline. The way you've discussed Michael's athletic ability, he seems to be have the athletic profile to fill those multiple roles that are often required of safeties in the NFL. Do you agree with that?
I do, you know, and because of his experience here, he's played in the slot, so he's played man-to-man in the slot on, you know, displaced receivers. He's also played on tight ends, but he's also been out wide and played one-on-one coverage against wide receivers. So that ought to help him versus athletic tight ends in the league, which, you know, those guys are big receivers for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, the way they run and the way they catch the ball, they're big receivers. So his experience in the slot and playing at corner at times for us should help him in the coverage aspect. Now he's got to continue to do things, be disciplined with his eyes and work on his technique, but those are all things that he'll continue to grow as a player. But that should help him where he's had some experience playing man coverage on really good athletes out wide and in the slot. That should carry over and help him versus some of the better tight ends.
In addition to his experience in the defensive backfield at both safety and corner, early in his collegiate career, played a lot of special teams. And as you know, Coach, when you get drafted in the NFL, perhaps the best way to see time on the field is special teams before they utilize you at your normal position. How much do you think his experience as a special teamer, even if it was earlier in his career, is going to help him as he makes the transition from college to the NFL?
Well, I think it's going to make a huge difference in this transition just because he's got some experience. When you start talking terminology on the kickoff team, on the punt team, coverage responsibilities, coverage terminology, he'll understand those concepts and he'll understand those schemes because he's done it. You know, it won't be foreign to him because he's had experience running down covering kicks. So I think because of those things, that would be a positive for him as far as trying to make the team and having an impact on the special teams.
Coach, final question from me. We talked about his adjustment to the NFL in terms of the playbook and adjusting to the athletes and the play on the field. But a lot of times, kids coming out of college, as you well know, have trouble adjusting to becoming a professional, you know, getting the paycheck, handling everything that comes with the NFL off the field, and, you know, staying humble, things like that. Michael is a person, attitude-wise, do you feel like he's well-equipped to handle that part of the transition to the NFL?
There's no doubt in my mind about that. I mean, I don't know the roster there with the Giants, but I think it'd be hard to find a better young man.
Wow.
As far as character is concerned, I was with Michael for a year. Not an issue with the length of meetings, not an issue with anything off the field. A yes or no, sir, young man comes to work every day. He's the type of young man that you know, wouldn't mind your daughter bringing home. So as far as that's concerned, I don't think there'll be any issues with Michael as far as that's concerned. Plus, his mama will get after him pretty good. She'll get after him pretty good if he did anything he's not supposed to. But, no, that'd be the last concern I would have with him in any off-the-field issues or you know, from a transition into a man as a professional. That'd be the last concern I'd have about Michael.
Well, that's certainly a positive aspect, talking with Chris Vaughn, Texas defensive backs coach. Coach, before we let you go, you know, the media, when they had been covering Michael Thompson, who was taken by the Giants, you know, talked about him as a player that had a great resume but really fell under the radar. And that's perhaps why a lot of teams didn't necessarily take a chance with him. I'm curious, what was your reaction when the Giants grabbed him in round number 5? And what were your expectations for him at least going into the draft?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I think it was, and that's the one thing about the NFL and the draft. You just have to, a team, you have to find one team that loves you, not 30, you know, 33 or however many teams are in the NFL right now. You don't have, if one team finds you and loves you, which the Giants did a great job, did their homework on him and brought him in and did an extensive background check on him and talked to him and worked him out, and they fell in love with him because athletically, he's one of the best athletes I've coached. I mean, the way he runs, he can run, can jump, got great transition for a tall kid like we talked about. And again, I think his best football's ahead of him. You know, he did not play defense in high school. He was a quarterback. So when he got to Texas, it was the first time he had played defense. So again, his learning curve and his ceiling as far as learning and playing football, playing defense, is really high. And I think his best football's ahead of him. So the Giants did a great job, I think, projecting him as an athlete and knowing that he's got great character and a guy that's willing to come learn and wants to be good. So now when you put all those things together, you've got a chance to have a guy and develop a guy. And I told people going into the draft that if you're looking for a young guy that you want to develop to help you all, on all special teams early in his career, but develop, you know, you have time to develop him into a player. He's going to be your guy because athletically he can do everything you ask him to do. And his football's and his best football still ahead of him.
Chris, great stuff. I know I learned a lot. I think Lance did as well, and I think Giant fans got a nice snapshot of the type of young man they've brought in here in Mykel Thompson. Thanks so much for the time. Good luck this upcoming season. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
You as well.
Thank you, Chris. That's Chris Vaughn. Did a great job. Defensive bass coach, University of Texas. And I want to focus in on one part of that because I've seen a lot of questions from Giant fans on Twitter. I'm sure you've seen them too, Lance, where they're like, well, you know, we drafted our two starting safeties this year. We got Thompson to play that free safety center field, which, based on the skill set Chris Vaughn talked about, he has the athletic ability to do it. You have Landon Collins as your quote-unquote back safety. You're fine. But he used that word develop a lot. And Thompson, I think, in some respects, is still raw. And he talked about him learning, recognizing defense, learning setting up the defense and things like that. So I'm not sure this is a plug-and-play guy. But I think he's somebody that has the athletic ability, especially to play that deep safety, you know, man slot stuff against some tight ends, and has the athleticism to do it. But I'm not sure week one this year he's going to be a guy that you can plug in at safety and say, you know what, go play, be our starter, and we have 100% faith in you. To me, there is a developmental process. As he mentioned, he didn't play defense until college, so the kid's still learning a little bit.
And that was probably the one key fact for Chris Vaughn to throw out. So you're talking about a very small sample size, John, during the course of his football career, in which he's actually lined up as a defensive player. I would agree with you. I think that his versatility, though, is what makes him extremely attractive, where you can throw him into a variety of different positions because he could be your backup John slot corner. He could be your backup safety. And I think that there's
and
enough.
And a core special teamer.
There you go. And that's what I really wanted to hear from Coach about.
Great
how
question,
he is
by the way.
So open playing special teams, and he could come in day one. He could be your every down special teamer. And that's fine. He's content with that. He seems to have a very openness to learning and adapting. And that's what you need when you're a low-round draft pick and you're not necessarily walking into what you just talked about, a starting spot. And I relate this somewhat to Demontre Moore, because Demontre Moore last season with the media I thought was very open. And the one thing he admitted was, John, when I walked in here, regardless of where I was drafted, I expected to walk into a starting job. I expected to be an impactful player day one. And then he realized, you know, there's some veterans that are in front of me. It took him about a year or two till he fully digested that mindset, and now you could see a slight change in terms of how he approaches making the roster as well as what his role is here.
And that's why I asked him the question about the attitude. As a kid who has to deal with maybe not being a starter right away and play on special teams, put the work in, learn, do the classroom work, deal with the frustrations that come along with being a rookie in the NFL, because there are frustrations that come along with it where you have to figure out how to deal with not going out there and playing 60 snaps a game, but still putting the amount of work in as though you were going to play 60 snaps a game. Because that's how you improve. That's how you get better. You work as though you're going to be a starter, even though you might not be when they snap the ball, you know, with 60 minutes to play in the game on Sunday afternoon. And it sounds like Mykel Thompson's exactly the type of kid that's going to do that.
Well, using your point, what do you always hear from a backup quarterback? That old cliche, I always prepare as if I'm the
starter.
Every backup, I think, across the board has to have that mindset. you're only one snap, one major injury away from being thrown into the mix. And Michael Thompson could very well be that type of a player. And the fact that he has that mindset entering the NFL, I think bodes very well for him as well as the Giants moving forward.
Absolutely right. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Steve in D.C. Steve, thanks for getting back on hold. We appreciate it.
Start over from scratch, man.
What do you got?
That was a good interview, guys.
So it was worth interrupting you, Steve. That's basically what you're saying. It was worth interrupting you then, based on the fact that you enjoyed the interview.
I was going to be listening anyway, so then.
I'm just messing with you. Continue. Yeah.
I mean, everybody else got to listen to me say no spill again. But, you know, what I wanted to say, just touching on his interview, the only thing that kind of worries me is I don't really see a lot of development in any of our players that get here. And, you know I don't really say much on this show because I don't really want to get into like a big debate because you're not. You know, I'm not trying to sway your thoughts or trying to get you to sway minds, but I just feel like, you know, I don't know if it's because they're pros now, but these guys, they get here, and not many people get better when they're here.
Well, Steve, just hold on 1 second. I want to throw out a couple names here, and I want to see if this agree with me, okay? Here's some guys that I think have gotten here and have gotten appreciably better, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Victor Cruz.
Victor Cruz he's came from nothing. He's worked hard. He's a hard worker. I mean, some people have it, John.
Wait, hold on, Steve. You got to give the coaching staff credit, too. You got to give the coaching staff credit for that, too. Jonathan Hankins is the guy that's gotten better since he's been here. Andre Williams got better as the year went along last year. Devon Kennard got better as the year went along last year. Kerry Wynn improved as an undrafted free agent when he got here last year. So there are a lot of guys that have gotten here and gotten better. And for all his flaws, Jaquan Williams was a seventh-round pick. He got a lot better after he got here, too, and he became an NFL-caliber linebacker. Jaquan Williams was almost an undrafted player, and he started for the Giants in the Super Bowl.
Man, he looked like he was in a baton race, waiting for receivers to run past him, then he would just try to catch it to him.
Well, Steve, keep in mind, he was also a key contributor on special teams, which is what John was alluding to during the Super Bowl. You can't just look at him as a linebacker, in fairness.
Last thing I'm going to do is sit here and try to bash the coaching, but I just want to record now. I don't feel like, there's always going to be those players that you can name, man, but a lot of that is just because of the hard work. But I'm just saying, like, the DeMarcus Moores, we just spend more time with these guys, and really make it sure that they are, that they're doing the extra work and that they're developing. And look at JPP. He hasn't gotten us a bit better since he's been here. And that's mostly because he's stubborn. He don't want to learn. He's still doing the same stuff, just relying on his freak athleticism. And I hope that somebody really gets in his head and coaches him.
Now, Steve, in fairness,
he hasn't even seen how good he can
in
be.
Fairness, I think JPP as a run defender has gotten leagues better than he was when he first entered the league. He's an elite run defender now, and he wasn't when he first got here.
Man, I could go on and on, but I don't want to do that.
I just want to throw out one more guy, Steve. I want to throw one more guy out. What about Prince?
Okay.
You want to throw Prince in that department?
Yeah, you can throw Prince in there.
Prince is a prince, man. Look where he comes from. That boy's trying to get better every day. That was a steal to him from where he
Well, but Steve, every name. But we can sit here. We can throw out 25 different names. You're going to find an exception for every name we throw out.
Steve, you're right. Here's the bottom line.
Because they come from small schools. They obviously got better coaching. I'm not going to argue. Some players have definitely gotten better.
Steve, the bottom line is this. The players have to be willing to get better to accept the coaching. Some players do a better job of that than others, and the players and their attitude have a big role to play in that, too. In that respect, you're absolutely right. Now, what's your other point?
Okay, here's what I don't want to say. I want to see ODB returning kicks this year. Not unless it's a playoff and we absolutely need it. I mean, we have too many other options.
Okay.
So I have read something about that. That's just foolishness to me. But going back to my original point, I just want to see the running backs getting equal time, and I want to see the defensive line. I just want to make these points, guys. I think it's important that we keep fresh legs in there. I think it'll lower injuries. I think it will create more competition, and most importantly, I think it will create teamness. I think it'll have guys more cheering for each other, genuinely, sincerely cheering for each other on the sidelines when they know, hey, I'm going to get back in, I'm going to get my opportunity. They'll share secrets, what's going on in the field, the whole nine. We can't just rely on our key players to carry us all year long. Tom Coughlin has to get away from that. I'm telling you, it's hurting us. I just think that if we play more players, we'll have a lot more success. That's all I got. I really appreciate y'all letting me run my mouth today. I bleed big blue all day, every day, so my opinion, like, I don't, you know, like I got ill will against the coaches. I don't. I just think that there's always room for positive change. And unfortunately, we've seen a lot of, well, I thought of, you know, potential good players come in here, and, you know, they haven't worked out for whatever reason or another. So I just think we got new players. Let's make some new changes and go win in 2015. That's all I got, man.
Don't be a stranger, Steve. Show.
I'll be listening off air. Did you have something for me before I hung up?
Nah, man, that's all good, man. Don't be a stranger.
No doubt. Take care,
guys. Be good, brother.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Going back to last season, and I think
Steve's
point is fair.
How about Eli Manning?
I think that goes without saying.
I think he's developed a little bit since he got here.
I would
say
you can give some credit to
the organization
for that. When
everyone wanted to jettison him in the middle of 2007 to two-time Super Bowl MVP, I think he's developed a little bit since you've been here.
There's more than less, let's put it that way, when you look at this roster.
Are there some guys that haven't developed the way you have liked? Sure. Did Ramsey's Barton develop the way you would like? No, he didn't. Did Travis Beckham Jr.? No, he didn't. But you know what? That doesn't mean the coaches didn't try to coach the guys up. It means the guys weren't able to accept the coaching and become better. How about Linval Joseph? He became a guy that got a big money contract in free agency. You don't think he developed while he was here? Hakeem Nicks became a pretty damn good player until injuries ravaged his career. How about Ahmad Bradshaw, a seventh-round pick? You don't think he developed since he got to the Giants? Brandon Jacobs, a relatively inexperienced running back, he didn't develop here? It's a pretty long list.
You know what I think is another fair point to back up that claim, and a lot of Giants fans always throw this out, how many Giants have left the organization and continued to progress elsewhere? Right. How about that? You know, think about all the Giants that have left this organization, signed with other teams. In fairness, how about comparing the development that they showcased here versus where they went on to go? I think that, to me, is night and day, apples and oranges, if you're to make those comparisons. So I think that it does speak volumes about at least how the Giants could pinpoint players and try to move them along. But, you know, John, I thought you hit on a very excellent point, and this is something that the fan base just doesn't have the luxury of seeing, and us as well on a daily basis. During practice, you know, you could have the coaches bending over backwards to try to get the most out of a player. At the end of the day, the player has to have the desire to take what is being taught and then translate that to the football field.
Some guys are stubborn. They're set in their ways like, well, I've always done things A, B, C, and D. I've done them this way. I'm going to do them that way. That's how I got here. Well, you know what? Sometimes you got to change things to have success at a different level of play. I mean, you can go across the litany of sports and look at guys who played one way in AAA in baseball or in college in the NBA, and they change their game when they get to the pros. Why? Because they have to in order to succeed. And some guys are willing to do that. Other guys are too prideful and stubborn, and they're not willing to do that. It all depends on the player. I can tell you this. The coaches do all they can to develop every player on this roster. They work their butts off to do it. They really do. I can't say it any other way.
And that's why, in terms of the outlook of this year's roster, speaking of coaches, the fact that you have a new defensive coordinator, you have a few new positional coaches, it's new voices. And new voices sometimes maybe can get to some of these younger players and even the established vets. I think the fact that you have some newness, not just to the roster but the coaching staff, also should excite the fan base that perhaps this is now a new outlook, a different way to view perhaps getting the most out of these players.
And in terms of one of the older coaches, Pat Flaherty, who's been here a long time, I mentioned I talked to O'Hara, D'Lan Snee about the new offensive lineman. They made the point to me, no better guy to coach these guys up and get them ready than Pat Flaherty. So that should definitely make Giant fans pretty comfortable moving forward.
Well, I'm not going to give a specific example of a player, but from what I saw at rookie minicamp, Flaherty, he was already in midseason form, John, and I'm sure you could back me up on this. He was working with those young guys. He was coaching them up as if
you
it
could
was
hear
week
him.
One against the Cowboys.
You could hear him.
Yeah.
I'll say that. You could definitely hear him. I've heard Coach Merritt a couple times.
Indeed.
From across the field to the Giant safety coach. So, yeah, trust me, these guys are vocal. And if these guys don't do what they're supposed to do, the players, the coaches let them hear about it. And, you know, they're going to drill into them to do things the right way. Excellent show, my friend.
It's always positive. Absolutely. Good stuff out of Chris Vaughn. Some real nice insight.
Good get, and I will give you full credit for tracking him down. Excellent
work. Thank you
very
much. I can pat myself on the back then for that.
Now, we're also working on a couple other guys. Any word from UCLA?
No word from UCLA. Okay. We're trying to track down Double O's positional coach, too, because we feel, obviously, for the fans' sake, it would just provide a little bit more insight because these guys work with those players each and every day.
Well, again, you could ask him about, you know, we know about, you know, the scouts, always speed, range, and all that stuff, but how these guys work in the meeting rooms, their attitude,
correct,
that's
the
stuff that only their coaches know about. You know, they barely talk to the media in college. So you really get stuff from the coaches you can't get anywhere else. Lance, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, then we're about 2 weeks away from OTAs. They start the week after Memorial Day, so we'll have coverage of that on Giants.com. We'll preview them next week. Big Blue Kickoff Live every day, noon to 1. Me and Dottino tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got him on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get no punch. Well, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.